The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 46. The Corn Mother in Many Lands. Section 4. The Double Personification of the Corn as Mother and Daughter. Compared with the Corn Mother of Germany and the Harvest Maiden of Scotland, the Demeter and Persephone of Greece are late products of religious growth. Yet as members of the Aryan family, the Greeks must at one time or another have observed harvest customs like those which are still practiced by Celts, Teutons, and Slavs, and which, far beyond the limits of the Aryan world, have been practiced by the Indians of Peru and many peoples of the East Indies, a sufficient proof that the ideas on which these customs rest are not confined to any one race, but naturally suggest themselves to all untutored peoples engaged in agriculture. It is probable, therefore, that Demeter and Persephone, those stately and beautiful figures of Greek mythology, grew out of the same simple beliefs and practices which still prevail among our modern peasantry, and that they were represented by rude dolls made out of the yellow sheaves on many a harvest field long before their breathing images were wrought in bronze and marble by the master hands of Phidias and Praxiteles. A reminiscence of that olden time ascent, so to say, of the harvest field lingered to the last in the title of the maiden, Ka, by which Persephone was commonly known. Thus if the prototype of Demeter is the Corn Mother of Germany, the prototype of Persephone is the Harvest Maiden which, autumn after autumn, is still made from the last sheaf on the braes of Balquhidder. Indeed, if we knew more about the peasant farmers of ancient Greece, we should probably find that even in classical times they continued annually to fashion their corn mothers, Demeters, and maidens, Persephones, out of the ripe corn on the harvest fields. But unfortunately the Demeter and Persephone whom we know were the denizens of towns, the majestic inhabitants of lordly temples. It was for such divinities alone that the refined writers of antiquity had eyes. The uncouth rites performed by rustics amongst the corn were beneath their notice. Even if they noticed them, they probably never dreamed of any connexion between the puppet of corn stalks on the sunny stubble field and the marble divinity in the shady coolness of the temple. Still the writings even of these town-bred and cultured persons afford us an occasional glimpse of a Demeter as rude as the rudest that a remote German village can show. Thus the story that Lassion begat a child Plutus, wealth, abundance, by Demeter on a thrice ploughed field, may be compared with the West Prussian custom of the mock birth of a child on the harvest field. In this Prussian custom the pretended mother represents the corn mother, Zitnia Matka. The pretended child represents the corn baby, and the whole ceremony is a charm to ensure a crop next year. The custom and the legend alike point to an older practice of performing, among the sprouting crops in spring or the stubble in autumn, one of those real or mimic acts of procreation by which, as we have seen, primitive man often seeks to infuse his own vigorous life into the languid or decaying energies of nature. Another glimpse of the savage under the civilized Demeter will be afforded farther on, when we come to deal with another aspect of those agricultural divinities. The reader may have observed that in modern folk customs the corn spirit is generally represented either by a corn mother, old woman, etc., or by a maiden, harvest child, etc., not both by a corn mother and by a maiden. Why then did the Greeks represent the corn both as a mother and a daughter? In the Breton custom the mother sheaf, a large figure made out of the last sheaf with a small corn doll inside of it, clearly represents both the corn mother and the corn daughter, the latter still unborn. Again, in the Prussian custom just referred to, the woman who plays the part of corn mother represents the ripe grain. The child appears to represent next year's corn, which may be regarded, naturally enough, as the child of this year's corn, since it is from the seed of this year's harvest that next year's crop will spring. Further, we have seen that among the Malays of the peninsula and sometimes among the Highlanders of Scotland the spirit of the grain is represented in double female form, both as old and young, by means of ears taken alike from the ripe crop, In Scotland, the old spirit of the corn appears as the carline or caelich, the young spirit as the maiden. While among the Malays of the peninsula the two spirits of the rice are definitely related to each other as mother and child. Judged by these analogies, Demeter would be the ripe crop of this year. Persephone would be the seed corn taken from it and sown in autumn, to reappear in spring. The descent of Persephone into the lower world would thus be a mythical expression for the sowing of the seed. Her reappearance in spring would signify the sprouting of the young corn. In this way, the Persephone of one year becomes the Demeter of the next, and this may very well have been the original form of the myth. But when with the advance of religious thought the corn came to be personified no longer as a being that went through the whole cycle of birth, growth, reproduction, and death within a year, but as an immortal goddess, consistency required that one of the two personifications, the mother or the daughter, should be sacrificed. However, the double conception of the corn as mother and daughter may have been too old and too deeply rooted in the popular mind to be eradicated by logic, and so room had to be found in the reformed myth both for mother and daughter. This was done by assigning to Persephone the character of the corn sown in autumn and sprouting in spring, while Demeter was left to play the somewhat vague part of the heavy mother of the corn, who laments its annual disappearance underground, and rejoices over its reappearance in spring. Thus, instead of a regular succession of divine beings, each living a year and then giving birth to her successor, the reformed myth exhibits the conception of two divine and immortal beings, one of whom annually disappears into and reappears from the ground, while the other has little to do but to weep and rejoice at the appropriate seasons. This theory of the double personification of the corn in Greek myth assumes that both personifications, Demeter and Persephone, are original. But if we suppose that the Greek myth started with a single personification, the aftergrowth of a second personification may perhaps be explained as follows. On looking over the harvest customs which have been passed under review, it may be noticed that they involve two distinct conceptions of the corn spirit. For whereas in some of the customs the corn spirit is treated as immanent in the corn, in others it is regarded as external to it. Thus, when a particular sheaf is called by the name of the corn spirit, and is dressed in clothes and handled with reverence, the spirit is clearly regarded as immanent in the corn. But when the spirit is said to make the crops grow by passing through them, or to blight a grain of those against whom she has a grudge, she is apparently conceived as distinct from, though exercising power over, the corn. Conceived in the latter mode, the corn spirit is in a fair way to become a deity of the corn, if she has not become so already. Of these two conceptions, that of the corn spirit as immanent in the corn is doubtlessly older, since the view of nature as animated by indwelling spirits appears to have generally preceded the view of it as controlled by external deities. To put it shortly, animism precedes deism. In the harvest customs of our European peasantry, the corn spirit seems to be conceived now as immanent in the corn and now as external to it. In Greek mythology, on the other hand, Demeter is viewed rather as the deity of the corn than as a spirit immanent in it. The process of thought which leads to the change from the one mode of conception to the other is anthropomorphism, or the gradual investment of the immanent spirits with more and more of the attributes of humanity. As men emerge from savagery, the tendency to humanize their divinities gains strength. And the more human these become, the wider is the breach which severs them from the natural objects of which they were at first merely the animating spirits or souls. But in the progress upwards from savagery, men of the same generation do not march abreast. And though the new anthropomorphic gods may satisfy the religious wants of the more developed intelligences, the backward members of the community will cling by preference to the old animistic notions. Now, in the spirit of any natural object such as the corn has been invested with human qualities, detached from the object, and converted into a deity controlling it, the object itself is, by the withdrawal of its spirit, left inanimate. It becomes, so to say, a spiritual vacuum. But the popular fancy, intolerant of such a vacuum, in other words, unable to conceive anything as inanimate, immediately creates a fresh mythical being, with which it peoples the vacant object. Thus the same natural object comes to be represented in mythology by two distinct beings, first by the old spirit now separated from it and raised to the rank of a deity. Second, by the new spirit, freshly created by the popular fancy to supply the place vacated by the old spirit on its elevation to a higher sphere. In such cases the problem for mythology is, having got two distinct personifications of the same object, what to do with them? How are their relations to each other to be adjusted, and room found for both in the mythological system? When the old spirit or new deity is conceived as creating or producing the object in question, the problem is easily solved. Since the object is believed to be produced by the old spirit, and animated by the new one, the latter, as the soul of the object, must also owe its existence to the former. Thus the old spirit will stand to the new one as producer to produced, that is, in mythology, as their parent to child, and if both spirits are conceived as female, their relation will be that of mother and daughter. In this way, starting from a single personification of the corn as female, mythic fancy might in time reach a double personification of it as mother and daughter. It would be very rash to affirm that this was the way in which the myth of Demeter and Persephone actually took shape. But it seems a legitimate conjecture that the reduplication of deities, of which Demeter and Persephone furnish an example, may sometimes have arisen in the way indicated. For example, among the pairs of deities dealt with in a former part of this work, it has been shown that there are grounds for regarding both Isis and her companion goddess Eris as personifications of the corn. On the hypothesis just suggested, Isis would be the old corn spirit, and Osiris would be the newer one, whose relationship to the old spirit was variously explained as that of brother, husband, and son. For of course mythology would always be free to account for the coexistence of the two divinities in more ways than one. It must not, however, be forgotten that this proposed explanation of such pairs of deities as Demeter and Persephone or Isis and Osiris is purely conjectural, and is only given for what it is worth.